Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And a welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've actually got four martinis today, good, bad, crazy, and one special one towards the end. We'll tell you about that in just a moment. Jim, yesterday, of course, we said the good martini was that the president was going to admit that there were major problems with the websites, which he kind of did, but spent most of the time sounding like an infomercial pitch man talking about how great the product is, even though the website stinks at the moment, and all the problems are going to be solved, and then you'll see just how fabulous the policies really are going to be for you. But in addition to many reasons why that's wrong, Consumer Reports now, the latest log on this fire for the administration, basically saying, well, they might be trying to fix it, but until they do, everyone stay away from healthcare.gov. Jim, I don't think we could have scripted that any better.
Yeah, and they obviously, once this comes out, it gets spotlighted by National Review and other conservative sources. It turns into a very major, you know, the inverse good housekeeping seal of approval, right? Consumer Reports saying stay away is probably about as bad a review as you could possibly get. So now, of course, they're coming out with a statement saying they still believe that eventually the sites will be working fine, blah, 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 you know. Consumer Reports always had this fairly nonpartisan, non-controversial reputation as a straight shooter. And now, of course, politics is entering its ugly head and they're like, well, don't come after us, Obama administration. Now, what makes the 1 month, stay away for the next month is interesting is that pretty much the consensus is the Obama administration needs to get the site fixed by mid-November or roughly, 1 month, because at that point, I guess it was you got to sign up by December 15th to have the insurance kick in by the beginning of the year. And so that's kind of the real functional deadline. Theoretically, you have until March 31st to sign up and not have to pay the penalty. The thinking is that if you don't have it, that basically December 15th is the functional deadline. All right. That after that, it's going to start, adding into it. Yes, you're going to have some people procrastinating. But let's face it, if you're not really interested early on, you might get some folks who want to do it right before the deadline. I'm sure we'll see a big PR blitz. But by and large, people who are interested in health insurance probably already visited the site by now. Kind of the unmentioned aspect of this whole thing is that my theory, Greg, is that most Americans don't like to think about health insurance, period. And so one of the reasons this bill is unpopular is it makes Americans think about health insurance. Because whenever you're dealing with health insurance, it's almost always bad news, right? If you're young and healthy, you don't think about health insurance because you're young and healthy and you don't have any problems with it, right? So with this, the closer you get to it, the window for getting those young invulnerables or the young indestructibles, the young invincibles, I'm sorry, is the term that they keep calling them. I keep thinking of them as like superheroes. it's a prequel to that Pixar film. the window gets smaller and smaller. And if you're a young person, maybe you're a little more tech savvy than grandma and grandpa. However, you're not going to keep going back to a site that keeps crashing on you, that you can never get through to. Now the administration is saying try the 1-800 number. Of course, if you call the 1-800 number, they'll refer you back to the website. On the website, they have a sign saying try calling the 1-800 number, and you end up in a loop yourself of trying to get this done. So basically, this is a very dramatic month ahead for Obamacare, because basically, if it continues to stink for another month, which will be in the neighborhood of 6, 7, 8 weeks, people will just start giving up on this thing. They just will decide this thing is never going to get working. And then you'll see an enormous amount of pressure on the administration to push back the individual mandate deadline, which they just fought over the last 3 weeks to not have to do during the government shutdown. I think I and a lot of other folks on the right who don't like Obamacare now would say don't push back the deadline, because at that point now you're just trying to help mitigate a collapsing system. Why should we make compromises and bend over backwards to help them with their system that they said was going to work and isn't going to work? So the outlook for Obamacare has gotten very, very grim very, very quickly, Greg, and so that's good news for us.
Speaking of grim and not good news for us, let's take a look at martini number two now and a couple of new polls that show the ongoing reaction to the government shutdown, and it's not good for the GOP. One is from USA Today Princeton, and the other is from Washington Post ABC News. In the USA Today poll, they have this generic poll that says 47% of those surveyed said Congress would be better off if nearly every member was replaced. The Washington Post poll says 85% don't like Congress. And of course, that's a little bit misleading, because you've got people who hate the other party and don't like what they're doing, and so they have a bad view of Congress. But when you look at who's to blame for the shutdown, Republicans 39%, Democrats 19%, both 36%. So Republicans might think for a second, oh, wow, that's pretty much the Democratic base that doesn't like us right now on this issue. No, 75% if you add both together, that blame just Republicans and blame both parties, that's 75%. Overall approval in the Washington Post poll for the party, 32%. Not good.
Yeah. One of the things that I think, you know, a couple of my colleagues like Jonah Goldberg have said, it's time for us to put this behind us, move on and all march together arm in arm. But I think it's kind of important that conservatives and Republicans look at what happened during the shutdown and look to see whether they really advanced the ball in the direction they want to. Dennis Prager has a column on National Review Online today saying that Republicans did, the folks on the right did what feels good instead of what actually does good for their position. And I think that over time, look, you look at these poll numbers, I think the net effect of this, I think that's going to fade with time. But I think it's safe to say that we did not persuade the American people on this. And I heard some people saying, you know, well, this, you know, the shutdown and all the efforts made beforehand all did good because it reminded the American people Republicans oppose Obamacare. Greg, do you think even in an era of low information voter and no information voters, do you think the primary problem for the Republicans is the public didn't know that they oppose Obamacare?
Probably not.
I mean, like, it really, you know, if that's all you could say you did out of this, then you could do the same thing just by shouting very loudly. All right. I mean, now then you can look at kind of the potential, you know, collateral damage. Certainly this didn't help Ken Cuccinelli in Virginia at all. I heard some people arguing that it cost Lonergan. I'm not so sure about that up in New Jersey. But I think one of the things that, you know, you saw the Republican Party starting to shift on issues like the NSA and the potential war with Syria over the summer. And now we came away from just basically being a group that, you know, was willing to shut down the government, which, you know, did not really help the Republicans that much back in the mid-90s. Ultimately, this was all based upon the idea that at some point it was going to get the red state Democrats to feel nervous, that they would vote for funding bills that would effectively defund Obamacare, fund the rest of the government, not take care of that. They'd put pressure on Harry Reid, and ultimately there'd be so much pressure on Barack Obama that he'd have to sign it. Well, that didn't happen. And as David Drucker said in a couple reports from talking to these red state Democrats like, you know, Mark Pryor's of the world and the Heidi Heitkamps of North Dakota, they never felt any pressure. They felt Republicans were holding the country hostage and that basically they were perfectly comfortable sticking with Harry Reid on this. So the whole point of the plan, like to get what we wanted, we had to pressure red state Democrats. That failed. So as we come up on the potential debt ceiling and other, you know, government spending deadlines, I think it's important that folks on the right realize that approach did not work and it's going to require another approach. And, you know, we can discuss what that really ought to be. But I think these poll numbers indicate this was not the – there's no point in trying to fool ourselves into thinking this was an effective tool to advance the movement or the party to where we wanted to go.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And as most people who follow politics are pretty well aware, longtime Florida Congressman C.W. Bill Young died after being in the hospital for a while late last week. He was 82 years old. He was the senior House Republican, first elected in 1970, well known for his appropriations prowess, particularly military contracts back in his Tampa district. His funeral is sometime this week. What's crazy, though, is that his widow, Beverly Young, is sending out emails to at least three people that we're aware of telling them not to come to the funeral, one of whom is Charlie Crist. She's apparently not happy with how Charlie Crist kind of had a cattle call when Mel Martinez resigned and brought in every Republican member of Congress and all these other folks to go through the possibility of them being appointed to the Senate. She didn't like the way that was handled. I'm sure she's not happy with the way Charlie Crist has treated Republicans in general in Florida. And then there's also two previous opponents of the congressman that she said not to come. She says in a statement that her husband specifically didn't want his memorial service to be a platform for local politicians to work the crowds, which does happen. And then she also claims that he gave her the names of the people he specifically didn't want there. So there's no way to verify whether or not that's the case. But, Jim, not exactly the tone you'd expect.
Well, you know, I guess you could say Bill Young gets the last word, doesn't he?
Yes.
You know, and for that matter, I don't know if Charlie Crist was planning on attending my funeral. But I'm not. You wouldn't want to see him handing out business cards or doing anything like that at the funeral. So, unless he really, really feels like paying his respects, I'm going to issue that same broad proclamation. Maybe Charlie Crist's attendance at funerals really should be invitation only. You know, just only show up if they want you there. It's unfortunate. It says something about modern politics. On the other hand, I think the wisest thing for all the people involved is that If the late Bill Young or his widow do not want you to be at the funeral, don't go to the funeral. That seems like kind of basic, you know. Don't be the political equivalent of Westboro Baptist Church, okay?
Exactly. And I think, what's the name of the book, This Town, where they talked about how yes. Tim Russert's funeral was just this political free-for-all, kind of? Very, very distasteful. So on one level, I could see why that would not be desirable for the family of any political figure, because whether they're political or not, it's a time of mourning. But very interesting how she handled that. Anyway, the fourth martini today is really a champagne toast to my favorite political figure of all time. Growing up in Iron Mountain, Michigan, my first political involvement was canvassing part of the city when I was 8 years old in a hotly contested mayoral election. My guy won, and that guy just happened to be my dad, Ted Corumbus. In addition to his day job for the past 35 years, he has served the city of Iron Mountain, half of that in elected office as both councilman or mayor, and the rest on critically important commissions. He shepherded massive economic growth and infrastructure upgrades while protecting the taxpayer, self-term limited himself twice, returned to service this last time only to restore trust to government, and has always been a model of integrity. He's not running for re-election this year, and so he was honored by the city last night at one of the final meetings he was part of, and he talked to the local TV station, and here was his basic philosophy on public service.
You just try to use common sense and hope that there's integrity in the people you're dealing with.
So congrats to my dad on a wonderful legacy of public service, and as great as a job as he did for the city, he's an infinitely better dad. So Dad, enjoy the recognition. It's exceedingly well-deserved.
Greg, that's terrific. And you know what? I think we all want to salute your father and all the good work that he's done. We're even willing to overlook his exploitation of 8-year-old child labor in his early campaign that you mentioned. So,
yes.
Sweatshop that was the Corumbus campaign.
I like to think it was those houses that I visited that tipped the scales.
Well, there you go. Who's going to slam the door on a kid?
That's right.
You were the secret weapon, you know, like, oh, it's another, oh, it's a cute door knock. Okay, all right, I'll vote for your dad. There you go. You were the factor.
On that happy note, Jim, we'll close up shop for today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please be sure to join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.